The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or to view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
This course for pass-fail, you should turn in your reading, weekly reading report. And I will give you, I'll send the email also. I'll give you two buyout, since I haven't said this before. Two buyout means you can skip two reports. If you are below that, you can pass this course. So pass fail, okay? So I'll send that announcement. I came back this morning from San Diego. And once I want to show you, I want to advocate, this is my travel bag, and that's all I bring. Because now I feel, one day, my son did had a homework assignment, carbon footprint, and he came back and said, we will be below the average, except you travel too much. So my footprint tremendously is the family carbon dioxide footprint. My way of trying to redeem a little bit is by traveling light. And I was in a meeting in San Diego. This meeting was on the application for thermoelectrics. So we actually in the last two days really. The key people from thermoelectrics area around the world converged in San Diego discussing the application area. I'll share some of the meeting findings. But see, I want to start by some of you read the one or two both of the papers, the assignment. The one is by Crowley Manning on the Inconvenient Truth, and the story is he attended one of those conferences organized by Al Gore, and so that was a good title, Inconvenient Truth title, and I know he called me at the time and was asking some slides. So whether you had any thought. The other review by Lombell is more optimistic. So one is the pessimistic one. The other is, I think, is the more optimistic one. And I don't know which side you're in. What's your any thought on that? Or anyone have any opinion? Yes?
But they kind of were saying some of the same thing with a different tone.
Uh-huh.
Because they both were saying that, you know, if this is going to be useful, you know, it's for low powers, niche applications, you know, maybe some recovered heat applications.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the difference was in terms of, I think it was, Bell was saying, this is going to be a great impact if you can do these applications. And Cronin, Binning was more like, you can do these applications, but it might not make that much of an impact overall. And you're never going to touch the large-scale energy sector with thermal projects.
Okay, yeah. So I would buy into in terms of the impact, conclusions seem to be a little bit different, right? Probably the same, no matter what you do, thermoelectric won't make a difference in the larger scale. So... who raised their hand? Who else?
But there's an argument for doing a lot of little things, right?
Uh-huh.
If you were for some reason to take over all of the low power applications, that's a lot of things
uh-huh.
to add efficiencies for. It's not the large scale.
Right.
So it's like if you replace every cell phone with something that saves 5%.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot of cell phones that you over time.
I guess the future is very uncertain, and it's very hard to see when technology will win.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's a good perspective. When I was asked to serve as a panelist in this meeting, I give a talk, but they also asked me to serve as a panelist. So I thought of what I would see anything during the meeting different from what I was going to talk on the scientific side. I pulled the chronic minus paper, I read it again on the airplane, and made a few slides I want to share with you. So let me, this is not in the handout, but I can put in the website. So I also try to use, you can think, tell me something about the last title. I say it's whether it's incorrect conclusion or incompetent truth. So I think the Cronin's argument is really based on here. This is the efficiency heat source, and they look at of course this is the maximum you can get. So that there's no mistake in the scientific side. The question is where you place the dots. This is fine. This is a cold Rankine cycle. You can even get to 60% if you do the cogen, right? And automobile, he has now put in there somewhere between around 25% internal combustion engine. And solar sterling, that's a mistake. Nobody has that kind of efficiency even demonstrated. Nuclear Rankine, that's still the same. Solar Rankine. So solar, these two dots are completely out of range. Right? The solar, if you think about the what's currently deployed in solar steam generation, is between 15% to 80% efficiency. And of course, in the lower temperature range, what is arguing there are competitive technology. This is an organic Rankine cycle, for example, where the organic has a lower evaporation temperature, so you can do the steam engine-based cycles. So that's his argument. Basically, you see the thermoelectrics, even you potentially get into two, you can make much sense compared to, of course, if you compare to this dot, right? But say, I thought that the comparison was not on the mark. Because now if you look at the PV, photovoltaic, right, amount of silicon is about 6 to 8%. The single crystalline silicon deployed is about 18% in the real world. Of course, in the lab, there has been higher efficiency demonstrated. And the first solar, pattern turnaround, that's a the fastest growing solar sector is about 10% efficiency. So, of course, even PV, you can make the same argument. Would make a difference, right? Because the world needs 30 terawatt in the next 30, 40 years. And PV, now the deployment annually is about 6, 7 gigawatt. You can go to see how much growth rate you have to catch that. But say, of course, nobody would really argue against PV. In the long run, this could be a solution, right? So you look at the PV cell efficiency progress. This is the best. This is the best efficiency progress against the year, right? And as I said, amount of silicon. This is the amount of silicon, I think. Right, no, this is the amount of silicon. And the deployed is about 6 to 8% efficiency in real world. And simple crystalline silicon, 26% here. And deployed is about 80%. And polycrystalline is about. And so this is a with this low efficiency, you are of course competing against the coal generation, and at this stage it's not competitive, so government is giving a lot of stimulus trying to promote this technology. And, but see, I think my argument, if you think about why solar, right, even nobody probably really will think that in the near future you get a 40% solar cell in the deployed. Of course, concentrating is another option, but there are a lot of problems with multi-junction solar cells. So why solar can make a, say, come to the map and people accept it? I think fundamentally is solar energy is free. So it's not like coal, right? Coal, any petroleum base, you have to put in more money to get the fuel. But in the case of solar, you have free fuel coming. So now you look at the thermal, how we're using energy now, you see, okay, mostly are fossil fuels. And the way we're using is converting first into heat and then into whatever mechanical electrical energy, which is simply heat, right? So heat is intrinsically connected in almost over 90% of the way we are using energy. So that's one part, that's the input part. And now you look at the output part, right? Useful energy is about 35%. That means 65% is thrown away. And of course, thermodynamics will tell you you have to throw away some. But see, we'll throw away a lot more what's needed or determined by thermodynamics. Because if you think about combustion process, right? Just take a 2,000 degree Kelvin. Some of that, most of this is a high temperature combustion, right? The Carnot cycle is over 90% efficiency. But we're throwing away 60%, more than 60%. So in fact, if you think about your free energy, right? I said the solar is free, but you're showing a lot of here also free. Okay. And if you can take that part, so of course you think where it could be deployed. Is it here or is it here? I don't have a clear answer, but the gut feeling is probably this is where you will have, because it's a free energy. So you may have more, easier acceptance. And of course, there are a lot of where a lot of heat is free, but even in the case of heat is not free, right? I add this intravenous generator. If you think about a household, right, and say you burn fuel, but then you just take a hot shower, that's where you generate income. So this is now people talk about combining heat and power in household. And fundamentally, of course, solar is also the heat. So whether we can use it, with thermoelectric, you have to at the end calculate the cost. In the real world, they say solar. It's still not competitive because it hasn't reached that cost level. So if you look at what's the solar cost, right? And per dollar watt, of course it's progressively decreasing. And now the best, the first solar is claiming they are about slightly below $1 per watt. So to reach the grid parity, some people say already, depends on where you are. But I think this is DOE goal. The DOE, Japan Energy, say this is where you want to be to reach the grid. When you say grid parity, it's really compete against the coal generation type of technology. So it's a factor of three. And doesn't sound to be very far, but it is a lot there. Of course, there are a lot of challenges to get there. Let's see. Thermoelectrics, I give one example. I think it's not the, it actually could have, even in the large scale could have competition, because this is actually a measurement down in the lab. So it's just two legs, one and two. Each leg is about 1.5 millimeter cube. Okay? And so this tool lag, when you have about 100 lightning degree delta T, you generate about 80 milliwatt. And 80 milliwatt, so if I take that, I go to calculate the weight of the SULEX, I calculate the material price, and I calculate the cost of for this 80 milliwatt from a material perspective, and I got about 10 cents per watt materials. Right? And that's just to say, this is almost like a bottom line, right? So you have to pay for the materials, and of course you have to manufacture it, you have many other things together. So the question is, can you go from here, say, to build anything that is cheap enough to be adopted? Of course, the efficiency, there are many constraints. In fact, the biggest constraint for thermoelectrics is, of course, efficiency is the one, but the very different from solar is because you have to have heat incoming and heat rejection. And those systems, auxiliary systems, could be much more expensive than just a thermoelectric. So again, this is where I think a lot of you engineers really think where it could be used. You know, so there are a lot of room for innovation. And the workshop I went to was organized by Department of Energy, Energy Efficiency. And the focus there is the automobile, because the automobile now is the biggest driver for thermoelectrics, because there's the waste heat from the engine, right? Let's say if you think about 40% of the heat actually goes through the exhaust, and it's really government legislation. The government, particularly in Europe, there is legislation, I forgot the year, I have loads, that a few years down the road, and the CO2 emission, there's a standard per 100 kilometer, and if you are 1 gram above that, it's a penalty of 95 euros. So with the 95 euro, so if you roughly you need a 3% fuel saving to get it, to get that 3 grams, and so that means the system has to be around 300 euros to have a few hundred watt of 300 watt of electric power. So roughly, you have a $1 per watt range. You know, coming in there. I thought it's automobile is the hardest problem. In fact, the BMW guy was saying the same thing. I agree with him, and that's I thought a lot of in the past. And if you can do automobile, you can do anywhere. So if that area is successful, I think there are a lot more impact. But unfortunately, that's also hardest because it has to be very space constrained, very efficient, weight constrained, right? When you add a weight to the system, you actually create a penalty, the efficiency of the automobile drops. So there are a lot of constraints, but see the dynamics is it's there where the government is putting money. So unfortunately, thermoelectrics is in very dynamic in terms of a dynamic situation where the money came from automobile is driving hardest application, and which is not quite sure whether it will be completely successful or not, right? You're tackling the hardest problem, but I thought that there are many other areas where you could innovate. Maybe it's not as hard, I think. Of course, the challenge is where the money then is. So, chicken and egg problem. But I think we need more success to stimulate the interest from both government and the public. And clearly, you see, I'm on which side of the fence. because I'm biased. Now let's come back to the science, right? I know that for many of you, it's a very steep dive. We start from nothing. I assume that the particularly from the chemical engineers and a lot of those concepts I was reading your report, a lot of those concepts are foreign and which is expected. But say, what I'm going to do to hoping is to bring you to where I was yesterday in the last today and the next lecture, probably part of the next lecture. And where I was yesterday there was talking about the most current topic in thermoelectric research. Last time we were talking about the energy levels in solids. We talked about the lattice vibration, where the quantum of the lattice vibration is a photon, so basic energy quantum of vibration. And of course, most of you, I had a colleague when I was a UCLA faculty member, and he said, he said in my course, three courses down the road, that I still don't understand what is a photon. It's not a real particle. Right? Photon is a collective vibration, and you have a lot more easier acceptance to the name of photon, but if you go to think about what is a photon, it's the you may have the same confusion there. What is a photon? Right? Photon is just people talk. It's an electromagnetic wave. It's a quantized form of electromagnetic wave. The quantum of the electron. And I took a course in quantum mechanics, and midway there was a substitute professor at Berkeley. And he asked the class, anybody understood? No student dare to raise their hand to understand quantum mechanics. If that's the correct answer, nobody understood it. Let's go from there. The photon spectrum in solid, and what's important in solid is the crystal structure. So in each crystalline directions, there are different, mass spreads because the spring constant is different, even though it's the same atoms. Electrons in solid, in different crystallographic directions, there are different energy levels for the electrons. So we started with the simplest picture, but I said, I want you to get comfortable. If you read any papers, you'll see people show those complicated lines where in each crystallographic direction, right, that's the different crystallographic direction, very often used symbols, and those are wave vectors, different wave vectors. Wave vector is 2 pi over 11. So you think about the wavelengths, the waves, different wavelengths has different, each wavelength has a corresponding vibrational frequency. And so that's the photon spectrum. And also shown at the end here, this is another concept that we introduced, density of state. So it's the number of quantum mechanical modes or quantum mechanical states at, in this case, per frequency interval. So it's a differential. So you can integrate this density of state over all frequency together. How many quantum states you have? So that's the photons. And the electron, again, you say here, different crystallographic direction, there is different energy for the electrons. Different wave vector, which means this electron wave, different wavelengths, have different energy. And this is the case of silicon bandgap, not bandgap. In the case of silicon, the minimum of the conduction band, maximum of the valence band, they are not at the same spot as the indirect gap semiconductor. And it's really this, whether you have gap or not, that determine whether you are metal, a semiconductor, an insulator. The insulator is a much larger gap. Semiconductor is a gap that's in the less than 3 electron volts. Right? And gallium arsenide is a direct gap with minimum maximum. Is at the same wave vector location, and they have very different optical properties. And then we give an example of how to calculate. Again, it's a Lambert counting, so how to calculate how many electrons we have in the, so here is most of those electrons in this region, the minimum of the conduction band. And when we do the calculation, we say dense up states. That's the number of states per unit energy interval. Of course, we went through the summation to introduce the dense up states. And then this is so the number of quantum states, and each quantum state, how many electrons we have, that's Fermi-Dirac distribution, and they integrate. So if you do a parabolic band, that's the say parabola, we can approximate, always approximate, not always, but as approximation, when I have a minimum or maximum, I can say the first order derivative is zero, so the Taylor expansion gave me the second order, that's a parabolic band. So with that parabolic band approximation, I can do Boltzmann statistics, I can do this integration. Get the relation of how many electrons is determined by EC minus mu, that's this gap. Okay? It's this gap is really the Kepler potential. So Kepler potential determines how many the number of particles, electrons. And here is say the related to the effective mass, how flat this mass is a curvature. How flat is this band? Right. So those are some of the key concepts that we learned in the last lecture. And today, we learned the phenomenon, right? You read also Goldsmith's chapter on Seebeck effect. And today we're going to have more mathematics going to have expressions for those coefficients. What determine the electric conductivity? What determine the Seebeck coefficient? What determine the thermal conductivity? So that's the goal here. And I will still use the same picture I presented in the first class, where I say I look at how many particles are going from left to right, and how many particles from right to left, and the difference between the flux. And this flux could be heat flux, it could be charge flux, and so we'll have the mathematical expressions for all the transport coefficients. So let me start with electrical conduction. And electric conduction, in the simplest picture, consider isothermal electrical conductor. So there's isothermal, there's no Seebeck effect. Just a simple potential flow. I have an electrical field, and the electrical field, this is the most, for mechanics, including me, the most troublesome point, is the electron has a negative charge. And so when I draw a field and say, and charge go that way, that's it. And now, of course, under a field, electron experience a force, so F equals ma, right? Force of the charge experience is the charge times the electric field, negative charge for electron, and equals ma, right? So that's the simple Newton's law of motion. And but the electrons do not travel very far because they will collide. They collide with each other. They collide with by the folon, the lattice vibration, also distort their motion. So once in a while, between the collision, they go straight under the field, but due to one collision, they will change direction, trajectory, right? So the terminal velocity, I can do an integration of this, right? So I do an integration. I say, okay, this is the collision time where the free acceleration time, you can think that way. And I say, this is the velocity the electron will gain between each collision, the terminal velocity. That's also called drift velocity. So you integrate that, you get drift velocity, and we can also write the E tau divided by M as a mu, and then mu is called mobility, just length, right? So we have velocity is proportional to electric field, drift velocity proportional to electric field, through the proportionality constant, the mobility. And now once I have the each electron drift velocity, I can calculate current easily. Why? The current is just add one more. The mean free path is the time between that collision times, now I don't use this drift velocity. This way I put a thermal velocity. So what that means is electron, they have two parts of velocity. One is they are doing thermal random motion, and in fact that's a very high speed, 10 to the 6 meter per second. Okay, very fast. And so they do random motion, that's a random thermal velocity. And then under field, they have a superimposed on that thermal velocity is drift velocity. And for mechanical engineer, that's the same with convection. Molecules move about 300 meters per second in this room. Okay? But see, the average velocity is zero. The convection is the average velocity is not zero. Right? So this is the convection velocity. That's the molecule random velocity. And now, so this is the mean free path times, so this is the collision, the distance between successive collision. That's the mean free path. Right?
So,
just
one
question.
Yes? So this drift velocity is basically because of the field that you're applying.
Right.
And the thermal velocity is already existing between the collisions.
Right. Right. So you even, typically drift velocity is much smaller than the thermal velocity. Just the same as when we do convection. You're electric engineer, so that's easier. Let's say when we do convection, it's a meter, 10 meters per second is a pretty fast wind, right? But the molecule is 300 meters per second. It's moving around. Okay, of course, electron thermal velocity could be 10 to the 6. Yes?
Why is the thermal velocity
0? Thermal velocity?
Yeah.
Anything unless you go to 0 Kelvin.
But like the average, not like the root mean. Is that like the root mean squared? The average going in each direction, right?
Yeah. So the average of velocity is zero, but the magnitude is not zero, right?
Right. The individual electron. So which one would that be?
This is the magnitude. This is not the vector velocity. It's a magnitude
of each. If it's not an ensemble property.
It's an average. It's a roughing. So it's an ensemble property.
So it's like the root mean squared.
Then. Right. So okay, how you estimate it? Is 1/2 kBT, we said before, roughly 1/2 mv squared. So that's your thermal, because this is the thermal energy, and the kinetic energy, that's the kinetic velocity.
Okay.
And the mass of electron very small, that's why it's much faster than the molecules. Okay. So now it's easy. Because the current, what's a current? Current is the lead motion of a charge. So the electron, coulomb, number density per unit volume, number of electrons per unit volume, times here the drift velocity. Right? This is the convection current. That's the electric current. And you go to check the unit, I should have a unit here. Didn't put it there. That's the amp per meter squared. Okay. If you do a heat transfer, it will be watt per meter squared. This is a flux. You go to look at the unit, right? So this is a coulomb per second. Second come from here. Gives you amp. Here is a meter cubic, 1 meter cubic. Here is 1 meter. So give you meter squared. So amp per meter squared. That's a unit of current. What is that? That's ohms more, right? So here is a few steps. You got that picture. You learn from high school. This is the Ohm's law. Electric current is proportional electric conductivity times electric potential. Electric potential, if you do electric field, is the electrostatic potential gradient. So that's rather into differential form. Okay? And in fact, this is very similar. If you take and replace this with temperature, that's a Fourier law. So if you, even though one seems like a convection picture, the other seems a diffusion picture, but they all collision dominate transport process. It's all collision laws, the diffusion phenomena. Okay. So that's the Ohm's law, right? And now let's go to, it's an isothermal in the previous case. Now I'm putting a temperature gradient. I want to consider a couple of transport. Thermoelectric is a heat and charge couple. And of course, when I have a unit, a potential, I still got that convection drift power. What's different now is I have a temperature gradient. So the molecule, the electrons, I'm used to talk to mechanical molecule, right? So electrons here move faster than electron here. Now there's also diffusion flux of charge. So to consider that diffusion flux, I have from left to right and right to left. That's what I did for heat conduction before. So the electron flux law, okay? So here I have previous one from previous slide, right? The Ohm's law, that's the drift part. Because I have electric potential. But also I have the diffusion part. This is going from left to right. This is from right to left. Again, I carry this negative sign, negative charge. Right? This way should be thermal velocity, right? I should have been most careful. It should be thermal velocity because they are randomly jiggling from left to right and right to left. And the lumbar density, and in this region, 1 meter free pass, you can go zip through. Longer than 1 meter free pass, will collide chain directions. So I'm only considering those within 1 meter free pass that can zip through from left to right. And then on the right to left, 1 meter free pass, you can go half of them only, right? Because it go equally going all directions, random. So this is the same way I did for Fourier law, the diffusion part. And now I do the Taylor expansion, the different expand over at x. So I do the Taylor expansion. I have E by x squared tau theta dx. And this part I'm just talking about. I messed up a negative sign, you see. That's what I say. I really don't like it, the negative sign in the electrons. Historical mistake. N, you know that. We just showed before, N is related, the electron density is related to the temperature and the local chemical potential. EC minus mu is the chemical potential. That's what I reviewed from last lecture. Right? So now, temperature depends on location, space, And easy mass mu, I can think of this mu, chemical potential, depends on location. Because n really, say mu determine n. So both depend on location. So if I take the dn dx derivative, I have dx dt dx, and d mu dx. Very good question. I can't do that simply in here. So I just do one third of weight square. Otherwise, I'll have to put it inside dm dx. So that's why my coefficient will not be accurate. Okay?
How much is the thermal velocity different from Fermi velocity?
Thermal velocity is very different from Fermi velocity. This is a, okay, so some of you know all those concepts, but if you think about what's a Fermi level, I briefly mentioned this before, in a metal, take a simplest case, this is the electron energy level, and then your metal Fermi level is here, right? So the energy of the electron is close to Fermi level because only those electrons are moving. The electron deep inside don't have any free space to move. So this one is the Fermi velocity, so mvf squared. So that's also, it turns out, this also is their thermal velocity. Okay, those are the electrons, because the electrons do have this much energy. They will move around with this energy. But in the semiconductor, okay, that's a valence band, that's a conduction band, and you dope, and your EF may be here. If you don't have the dope, that's what I was drawing before. Right? So, this EF, no electron have this EF. Electrons only in this region, because thermally, a small fraction of electron go there. So, those energy is really, this is a, just a half kBT. Because relative, this kinetic potential is zero, let's say, relative to the kinetic energy relative to here. Zero. So the only is about the populate about half kBT.
Half kBT is the difference between the energy of the electron and the chemical potential.
No, not even chemical potential, only relative to the bottom of conduction band that you see there. Yes.
Yeah, so it could be anything. It could be like
0 degrees
or.
Yeah. Degrees, but see, the average energy of those electrons near that the conduction band bottom is about half kBT each mole.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to put in this, take a derivative. My sign might be screwed up. Go to check. I make the up again here. So here is what I have. I have this derivative, and also I have dt dx derivative. Okay? So now I have the chemical potential derivative. Phi is the electrostatic potential derivative. And it turns out, this is when you do detailed coefficient analysis, this coefficient and this coefficient is the same. So this is fundamentally is also called the Einstein relation, because here is the related to mobility, right? And here is related to the diffusivity. The chemical potential gradient gave you the diffusion of the charge. And here is the motion. So Einstein didn't do electrons. Einstein did Brownian motion. Hypothesis of molecules in liquid. And he derived the relation between the molecular diffusion coefficient and molecular mobility in the liquid. And that relation turns out also to be true between electric conductivity, and here you can think that as an electron deficit. So this is generally called the Einstein relations, and if you generalize even more, is fluctuation dissipation theorem. So Einstein, that's his PhD thesis. If you were born at that year, you may be writing a PhD thesis, very important. He did a Brownian motion, and really, it's interesting to read that he didn't even know there was experiment on Brownian motion. So he started statistical thermodynamics, the other branch of statistical thermodynamics. Before that, it was Boltzmann. Boltzmann doing gas. Einstein tried to do liquid, and go to read. It's not that difficult. So there is, like I said, diffusivity conductivity is the same here. There's a relationship, and if we combine these two terms, I have rewriting this here into this equation here, and the temperature gradient I write into the next term, right? So I have electrostatic potential gradient, temperature potential gradient, and a temperature gradient. So that's, it's this three term that drives my current flow in the case when I have a temperature gradient in a conductor or semiconductor. Okay? And I continue this. Combine electrostatic potential with the chemical potential. That's called electrochemical potential. Some of you that do battery, you know the electrochemical potential in battery. And in fact, electrical engineers should also know that. It's not the electrostatic potential that drives the current flow, it's the combined electrochemical potential that drives current flow. And most, of course, most electrical engineers deal with isothermal, so you don't consider this term, isothermal, but you have to consider this term. So there is always electrochemical potential gradient that drives the current flow, and so it's a very important concept, and it's hard to understand to some extent. Where is this electrochemical potential? So I said the E say this separation here is the chemical potential. And the electrostatic potential, this is the one I'm drawing a conductor or semiconductor. And if I draw a relative to actual reference here, this EC is parallel. So electrostatic potential depends on where you put plot your reference. So I can always shift up and down because it's the gradient that determines really the current, right? So there's a constant reference point. So it's the gradient of this EC that gives you electrostatic potential. And so I have E say here, minus A. The problem is energy, E say is energy. Energy divided by charge is electrostatic potential. This is always the historical problem, not my problem. Okay? Electrostatic is here. Chemical potential is here. So what's left is this. Electrochemical potential relative to actual level. It's that gradient that drives current flow. Okay? So now I combine my electrical current in the front. I just say this electrical conductivity I generalize with the coefficient L11. And I combine all the two electrochemical potential gradient So this is a typical, the generalized Ohm's law is, should be this one. Electric current proportional to electrochemical gradient, with the electric conductivity as a proportionality constant. And when I have temperature gradient, I have L12, that's the extra term, the coupling between charge and heat. So that's the L12 here, due to the temperature gradient. It's really here what they created the diffusion. Yes?
So what is this electrostatic potential again? You say it was the same as the gradient of DC.
Yeah.
But then that cancel out the
This one is the chemical potential. This is the electrostatic potential. The difference of these two give you the electrochemical. Okay. We can discuss more. This is the electrical. Okay. Now, I'm combining everything together. And C-back is when there's no current flow. C-back voltage is an open circuit. When there's an open circuit, no current flow, you can say, on my level, there's temperature gradient, there's correspondingly electrochemical potential gradient. You put a probe there, you don't measure electrostatic potential. You measure electrochemical potential. Okay, the metal is connected to semiconductor. When you connect it, the metal both say is a Fermi level connected to the electrochemical potential. So you measure, you can only measure this. But we are doing one experiment and we really want to measure electrostatic potential, what are we doing? So we are doing, for example, we're trying to do. Okay, there is a green boundary, green one, green two, and the green boundary, there is the electrostatic potential. We can't measure it with the contact method, but we're trying to put an atomic force microscope, and there, when they have, there is electrostatic potential, it will be electrostatic potential determine the repulsion or attraction. Okay, that's the Coulomb's law. When you calculate, use the Coulomb's law, it's an electrostatic potential. So there is still there are ways to, I said the contact method can't distinguish, but there are ways to distinguish it. Okay. So that's where the C-back coefficient is. C-back coefficient is defined as it really should be latent d phi dx divided by dt dx. Should be, so here is negative d phi dx, then it should be phi h minus phi z, and you can say it's related to the C-back coefficient now can be expressed in terms of EC minus mu, that's chemical potential. 3 kBT is the thermal energy, right? So, the C-back coefficient has a very clear picture here. And this is so you can set up two pumps. One is the chemical potential here, between here and here. That's EC max mu. And the electrons average thermal energy in this region. But you ask them, the Vx is a random velocity. So that three halves is not good. Because of Vx, I have to do integration averaging, and it turns out it's a five halves rather than three halves. I'll show you more exact expressions. Okay? So now, any question here?
To go back one slide.
Yeah.
Why do we have, in the graph, why do we have the position dependent energy level, conduction band edge is. Conduction band edge has a slope.
That's the potential of the electrons, right? Potential of electron is divided by electric charge give you electrostatic potential. Under a current flow, your electron, let's say the electrostatic potential is going down slope or up slope.
Okay, I
think. When I think about down slope or up slope, I always have to sit there thinking for a long time whether it's positive charge or negative charge, so I get confused. That's why I don't like the charge negative sign. Okay. By the way, I don't think, let's say, for a mechanical engineer to understand this part, I have to sit there many, many times. And I think sometimes when you think you understand, you got to ask the electrical engineer if you understand it is problematic. Okay? But it's good to sit there and think through yourself. Okay. Now, I said in the previous part that was electric current, right? Now I'm going to do heat current. Okay? Peltier coefficient is a heat current. So I have to think about the heat carried by the electrons. And again, we did this in the first lecture, right? When I think about the heat flow, Fourier law is from left to right to left, diffusion. Here you can see I put an equipotential conductor, low current flow, just a heat diffusion. Right, that's a Fourier law. The Fourier law is valid for electrons and for photons. I didn't say whether it's electron photon here in this derivation. Right? So I'm not going to this detail because we already done this before and the thermal conductivity is 133 big gamma. So that's what we did before. Diffusion. And now I'm going to do charge. Focus on heat carried by electron. And what's the heat carried by electron? And here you have to go back to all the thermodynamics. And first law tells you that du equals dq. That doesn't look typical thermodynamics. For mechanical engineering, you do du, dq, du equals dq minus pv. PdV, right? There will not talk about PdV work, there's no volume change. So we'll talk about chemical potential. So if you're a chemical engineer, this part is easier. Okay? So dU equals dQ plus mu dN. That's a chemical potential term. And what this tells you, because dU, U is N times individual energy, E, if you have N electrons. So E minus mu is related to Q. The heat, so the energy of a charge consists of two parts. One is the chemical potential, the other is the heat. Okay? So E minus mu is the heat carried per charge. And now, if I take that, I say the heat carried per charge is E minus mu. Again, apply to the same picture going from left to right and right to left, right? So this is a velocity, random velocity, thermal velocity, Lambert density per unit volume. And again, you go to check here, it should be watt per meter square, the unit. This is a jar. Per second gives you watt. And then, say, meter and over meter cubed give you meter square. So, here I have left to right to left diffusion. I add an extra term here. Because When I have a potential gradient, right? I'm looking at this case. I forgot to draw one. I should have an electrical potential going down, right? I have current flow. I have temperature gradient, potential gradient, So that's the, I'm considering coupled electron heat transport. So this is the diffusion term, and this is the drift term. Same as I consider now, I go back a few slides, right? Here, diffusion term for current flow, drift term for current flow, right? Diffusion and drift. So let's look at it again. Here is diffusion, and drift is a, this is a drift velocity times the charge density, and then each one is carrying E mass mu. So this is the convection term there. Convection of the electrons going through the surface withdrawal. And now, if I combine, because this term will give me the same thing as I do before, electrochemical potential. And the second term, I will have also the temperature gradient. So here I draw, I made some jump. I didn't go through each step derivation. And you can go through that yourself. And now the heat flux, what I have from this is the heat flux carried by the electron is temperature gradient term, but also is a potential gradient term. So I have, again, a couple, before I have a charge flux, electric current, the potential gradient, temperature gradient. Now the heat carried by the charge is also proportional to the potential gradient and temperature gradient. So under equal, isothermal case, this is zero, but this is not, right? This is the Peltier coefficient. When I have heat flow through, a charge flow through the current, the charge carries heat. So this is the L2Y is the Peltier coefficient. And so now I have the couple of the heat and the charge flow, and I have the two expressions. One, before I wrote the charge, if you go back to the previous two slides, is JEX equals L11 times this plus L12 times this for the current flux. And now for the heat flux carried by charge, I have L21, L22, and I will come back and rewrite this expressions later. Okay. So, this is the kinetic. I have not considered the average. That's the question you asked. I cannot do that from this hand-waving picture. Okay. When you want to do the detail, you have to say each charge have different energy, slight different energy, right? So you have to count more carefully, just like we did before, counting all the modes, counting all the quantum modes, and each one is moving at a velocity, local velocity, its own velocity, and each mode has this number of charge determined by Fermi Dirac statistics. And of course, this B could be either E, minus E, that's when I do current, or E, capital E, minus mu, that's when I do heat. So if I do that, I can get the more rigorous expressions. And this is what you still get the same format, except the coefficient is a little bit different. Okay? So I have this relation, I've written before, same format, and those cross terms, these two terms, depends on how you write. If you write generalized thermodynamic force is equal, But this is not generalized thermodynamic force, so it's related. So that's the Ansagor relation. And the coarse term always related. If you do piezoelectricity, there is also mechanical to electrical coupling coefficient. In the case of mechanical motion, or when you count current flow, current to mechanical, so the reverse, this coefficient, cross coefficient, is always related, and that's the Ansagor relation. Very fundamental. Ansagor got a Nobel Prize for this. Okay? So that's the summer for the charge flow, and for the charge carry the heat flow. And now I'm going to write this. You tend to think this is a thermal conductivity, right? That's not right, okay? Because when I write, I could write my potential, rewrite it into JEX L12. So I'm replacing my potential in terms of electric current, because the electric here, potential is related to temperature driven. And now if I substitute into here, okay, I will say the electrical flux, heat flux, carried by the charge is proportional to electrical current flux, and with proportionality, that's a Peltier coefficient. I said this L21 is a Peltier coefficient, that's not right, because this is the potential. But the Peltier is really current flux proportional to the charge flux. And this L21 divided by L11 is the Peltier coefficient. And the next term is the temperature gradient. So only when I write into this form, I have the expression for the thermal conductivity. It turns out that for electrons, the thermal conductivity involves all four coefficients. Right? L11, L12, L12, L21. And of course, these two coefficients are related. So, this is the thermal conductivity. And now if I write more clearly using the parabolic band approximation, again, here I'm not going to give it the derivation, just say the same, I follow those steps, and do, in fact, I need to go forward to my equation, we're not going into that. And here is my final expression. This is random velocity, relaxation time, which could depend on energy, and before when we do it, we didn't say it depends on energy. So we have, so this is a more rigorous expression, and density of states, and this is the other coefficient. So with that, you can actually, using those coefficients, you can actually go to model the solid. And what you have, the solid is really different solid, have different density of states, so the band structure is different. And sometimes it has multiple bands, so you have to consider multiple bands effects. Electrons and holes is another. So you can see electrons, negative charge, holes, positive charge, and those could all be taken into consideration using these formulations. Again, I don't expect that you fully, say be able to derive it. I didn't derive it, right? But this is where many people, when they try to interpret the experimental data, they go to those expressions and try to fade the expression. I said try to fade because you actually do not know exactly, for example, what's happening in the solid. Okay. I said the electric conductivity, electronic thermal conductivity, that's in the previous slide. So those are the electronic conductivity here. Electronic thermal conductivity. And the L11 is the electrical conductivity, sigma. And the ratio of this, if you go to do Fermi-Dirac statistically in metal, you can do those integral. And it turns out the ratio for called metal is a constant. And this is a so-called Wigman-Franz law. And so that means thermal conductivity is very hard to measure. So if you measure electric conductivity in metal, as long as the lattice contribution is not large, you can roughly, I say roughly because this is not always valid, just to measure electric conductivity, you can go to estimate thermal conductivity. Just based on this interrelation, Wiedemann-Franz law. So this L is the Lorentz constant, a Lorentz number. Let's say, if you do semiconductor, it's not a constant. So in thermoelectrics, if you go to actually read thermoelectric literature, many people just take this Lorentz number and they say, okay, I measure electric conductivity, I want to find out what's electronic thermal conductivity, I calculate. They will take this constant number and they subtract the total measured thermal conductivity so the rest is due to phonon. That is vibration. And that often lead to very wrong, weird result. They can't interpret those phonon. Because it did a wrong calculation. In semiconductor, L actually depends on, you have to calculate it. You have to go back to calculate the electronic thermal conductivity using this transport coefficient and the electrical thermal conductivity, electrical conductivity. I'll give some examples later. Okay? And again, say so let's go back to look at what it means. Right? What's the CMAC coefficient? So if you look at it, that's the, from the previous expression there. And it's really the CMAC coefficient is the weight average of electron energy relative to EF. EF really is mu, chemical potential, okay? In electrical engineering, the chemical potential and Fermi level is typically mixed together. They don't distinguish very carefully. So, EF weight against electrical potential, electric conductivity at each energy level, and that's really the average energy of the charge relative to the chemical potential. So that's still what I said before, and the electric conductivity is the density of states, velocity, electrical relaxation time, electron relaxation time, and DFDE. We'll show more later on. So with that, now you can say why metal is not good. Okay? Metal is not a good material for CBAC because CBAC is too small. But why metal is CBAC too small? And this is because in the metal, EF is in the band. Okay? And the average energy of electron relative to EF, right? So the electron in metal is about half is above, half is below EF. Okay? The electron below, because of the Fermi Dirac distribution, is over, roughly over KT, that's the electrons. Only on this region, KBT, in this region, there is movable charge. I draw too wide, it's really just very narrow. Okay, above is positive heat, below is negative heat. When they move together, the positive heat energy above the chemical potential move forward, energy below the electron below the chemical potential carry negative heat forward. At the end, they two cancel, so you got a very small CBAC coefficient. So metals have very small CBAC coefficient. And if anybody has any idea to cut this part off, you can win big. I don't know how to do it. Okay? Or cut the upper part off. So in metal, do you have ways? Think about the ways. How I can place something to scatter potentially half of this So if you scatter the bottom top, you get a positive feedback coefficient. Current flow, feed flow in the same direction as the current flow. If you cut the positive part, you get negative feedback coefficient. The heat flow opposite the current flow. Okay, so this is where if you do materials research, you have to think hard on this. How you could potentially manipulate the material to create this asymmetry in the current heat carried by each charge. Right? Semiconductor is better for seabed because, okay, of course here what I'm drawing is this upstairs. If you think about this, I said seabed is the average energy, so semiconductor, for example, if I dope it so that Fermi level is here, and the average energy is right here, so there's no negative part potential, right? So all each of this electron here is relative to the chemical potential is a carrier, a positive heat relative to chemical potential, no cancellation. Thermoelectrics is typically not here, they don't put actually into here. So the bottom part is actually not good, only the top part is better. Why they want to dope it there is because when you put your chemical potential here, the number of electrons here is very small. Okay? And the number of electrons is very small, so the electric conductivity here is this is proportional to the number of electrons. So what do you want, right? Because at the end, Zt is S squared sigma. Remember? Zt, figure of merit, is S is the seabed coefficient, S squared times the electric conductivity. Because you want enough electron to carry the heat. You just don't want one electron to carry heat, just doesn't carry enough heat. So, you see here, if I look at this, what is dF, Fermi Dirac is very symmetric around the EF. A density of states is here, so it's really in semiconductor only this region, this two product is not zero. Only those region is contributing to electric conduction. If you look at this expression, right? And so that means only this region of charge relative to the chemical potential is the seabed coefficient. So you later on, when we talk about quantum structure, people want to say how you can make this region carry more charge. So you create a peak. Here, the distance of states is not good, okay? D is the square root of E minus E, EF, you see before. This is a very small density of states. So don't give you many carriers. So that's where people do a lot of things when they try to improve electron. They say, can I create something sharper in this region so I can put more electrons? So remember that at the end you want to optimize S squared sigma. Not that you want to optimize that. You want to optimize ZT, so there are still some things we're missing, okay? So this is the material side, the basic material physics, and if I go again to Boltzmann statistics, I said that the electrical energy scattering relaxation time depends on electron energy. So there are a lot of different scatter mechanisms. We're not getting into that. You go to do material research, you read literature, but if I do a gamma here, just say potential power. For example, due to lattice, due to acoustic Coulomb scattering, this gamma is negative one half. Okay? So if what it means negative one half is a low energy electron has a longer relaxation time. They travel further. High energy electron travel less. you don't like that. If you look at that, you see back I have a gamma here. And this is a, not three halves. If you do it before, that's three halves. I said it's five halves. Right? That's due to this Vx squared. And this gamma is not good if it's negative, because if I think about Kuznets fermion scatter, the high energy electron is scattered. But I want that high energy electron travel as far as possible. Okay? But the ionized impurity, it turns out that gamma can be three halves. Three halves. That's very good. Of course, ionized impurity, so that means you dope material very heavy, you can have ionized impurity dominant. The problem is your mean free parts become very short, your electric conductivity becomes small. Thermoelectrics is always a struggle. You try to sense one guy, the other guy is not there. And that's why the material research is very hard. Okay. So, and of course, if I put the EC mass EF when you have to N divided by N, and then you will see, because this depends on temperature, so as the temperature increases, Seebeck coefficient increases. And the reason is that if you look at this one, you go to check the reason, it's as you increase temperature, actually the fermion will shift down, so the average energy now increases relative to chemical potential fermion. So that's the reason why the Seebeck coefficient increases with temperature. Okay. Well, I give a very simple one-band picture, although I know many of you think this is pretty complicated already, right? But see, if you want, if you do materials, you go to relook at the real material. This is still among the simplest picture what I can give you. And by seeing in real material, for example, I have electrons, I have holes, positive charge, right? They cancel each other because when your electron move, see positive energy, hole move, negative energy relative to chemical potential, they cancel each other. So Seebeck for electron is negative, for hole is positive. And then you combine when you have two different electric conductivity for electron hole. And what's worse is this thermal conductivity. They just don't not only combine electron hole and lattice vibration, but they combine, they carry a cross term. This is because when the electron and the hole both diffuse from one place to the other, there's an extra energy across the band gap, right? That extra energy, so when electrons go from one diffuse to the next place, they combine with the hole in the next place, they carry a lot more energy. So this is a bipolar contribution of thermal conductivity. Very bad. Yeah? And it took me several years to understand the bipolar. So even if you don't understand everything, you can still do research there. Okay? When I first wrote the thermoelectric proposal, I didn't know whether a metal was good or semiconductor was good. Just to make you feel more comfortable. Okay. Look at this. This is the real material now. And this is actually out of our experiment. This is the Seebeck electric conductivity decrease with temperature. Seebeck increase with temperature. I wonder you start appreciate, look at the curve, see what the physics, what's tending physics. So I said Seebeck typically increase with temperature, that's all fine, except that now finally start to drop. See, that's, you said it was wrong. I'll see why. And if you look at the electrical Lambert, electron Lambert density, N will increase with temperature. So you think the electric conductivity should increase with temperature in semiconductor. But this is a completely wrong trend, right? if you think about n, go to check your n at the third, fourth slide, second slide I hand out, right, that was reviewed from last lecture. The reason was that we dope this very heavily, and it's not a, almost like a metal. Metal electric conductivity drop with temperature. So the carrier in the material is somewhere between semiconductor and metal. Microelectronics, you never dope that. You seldom dope that. And so in microelectronics, most semiconductor, the electric conductivity increases with temperature. And CBEC, why start to drop? That's because when I go to higher temperature, I got a holes. Electron go excited from a valence band to conduction band, and left behind the empty states, left behind those empty states are holes. So temperature increase, more excitation, more energy. You eject the electron from valence to the conduction band. You got holes. Holes is detrimental, okay? Because they're canceling the electron. So when I go to high temperature, I start to drop there. The holes start to cancel. Okay, what do? You can dope it heavier. So this has higher electron number, that shifts to higher temperature. Shift the pit. You can play with doping for different temperature. Right? Okay. But here you see the peaks here. You have to optimize it. And you can, if you do material research, you can just miss the optimization. You may get a goal through away. That could happen. Okay. And so there are a lot of details, of course, in doing the material research. Okay. I think I will stop here.